You're listening to The Read Out. One development leader, their big idea, and how it can shape the future of Australian development assistance. Hosted by Lab CEO, Bridie Rice.
This week, we're taking a slightly different approach to our usually internationally focused podcast. We're going to look at an issue closer to home, and that is integrity and contestability in the Australian public service. Why, you may ask? Well, here at the Lab, we are seeing time and time again that great development results aren't just achieved off the back of good technical analysis or a bright idea. They also require high integrity leadership and an environment that really nurtures good-natured debate at every step of the way. And it's this last thing, good-natured debate, or a culture of contestability, that Australia's emerging generation of development and foreign policy leaders are telling us is the key to the future of Australian foreign policy. But frankly, maintaining integrity and contestability is a job for government that never ends. The recent robo-debt saga and the mishandling of sensitive information by corporate consultancies are lessons in humility for Australia's public leaders. And as we speak, a review of think tanks by Peter Varghese is underway, asking what will it take for Australia to foster a robust international relations ecosystem. Now, of course, Australian foreign policy is a job that starts at home, so what better place is there to start than lifting the lid on our own challenges? Now, the APS Integrity Task Force report was released last year. It's a massive piece of work inquiring into how the Australian Public Service can boost its integrity. And I am delighted to chat with its chief architect today, Sue Robinson. Now, Sue is an international law expert, she's an executive coach, and most pertinent to today, it was Sue who was appointed as the senior public servant to lead the APS Integrity Task Force. Now, she also penned a great article journaling her experience as leader of the task force. It was called There But the Grace of God. Welcome, Sue.
Thanks very much. Great to be here.
Sue, as I was reading your article, I was struck not just by what a shock had rippled through the Australian Public Service at the time the task force was running, but also how your convictions as a long-standing public sector leader were challenged as well. What was going through your mind as you were putting pen to paper?
Yes, look, it was a big challenge, I have to say. But from a personal perspective, I've been super interested in ethics for a long time and obviously very passionate about public service and wanting it to thrive and to do its job well. So I think that's why I was attracted to the brief, if you like. But just stepping back a bit, I think, you know, we had this context of policy failures, and what we were asked to do was, I guess, take a broad landscape perspective and see what gaps we could see across the integrity landscape in the public service. So I think for me, the first big challenge was probably the breadth of the topic of integrity. So if you ask people doing different functions what integrity is, they'll all have a different answer. So I think one of the first challenges is when we are talking about this, you know, what are we talking about? If you ask a statistician about integrity, they'll talk about data accuracy. If you ask a cybersecurity expert, they'll talk about the need for systems to be impenetrable from unfriendly interference, and police will have a different definition of integrity, probably based on the criminal law and breaches of that. So I think one of my first challenges was, you know, how long is this piece of string and what are we going to focus on? So how could we add value alongside all the institutional things that were happening, such as the establishment of the National Anti-Corruption Commission and a variety of other APS reforms on merit-based appointments and things? So yeah, we jumped in and decided to focus on culture, systems and accountability.
So that sounds like a rich journey and a really big challenge to focus the mind. What grabbed you the most and what challenged you the most during the process?
I think as a lawyer, not getting bogged down in integrity as a compliance measure. When we think about integrity, it's easy to go to rules and regulations and the criminal law, and all those things are crucial, but they're not sufficient. So what I learned was that an overemphasis on compliance can really dilute our ethics muscle and really stop us engaging in the grey area of some of our decisions. My first real change of mind was away from compliance and onto prevention, and not wanting integrity to be siloed in particular business units of departments either. So that's what led us to really focus on a cultural leadership-based and communications-focused response to integrity rather than more law and more regulation, because we had been working closely with a behavioral ethics psychologist, Dr. Brock Bastian, and what I had learned from him was that, in fact, these more informal interventions based on what leaders do and how leaders communicate was equally essential to building culture of pro-integrity. So compliance, very important, but not enough by itself.
So let's go another round on that, because there is plenty to offer by way of reform ideas in your task force report. But I feel like what you're saying right now, and certainly what is in the report, is that actually a change to culture and attitude in the workplace is what is the most critical thing to focus on. And it feels like what you're talking about, certainly in your article, is public servants having the sort of psychological safety to frankly speak out and contribute to well thought through public policy. So can you just talk us through why you think it is that better cultures of contestability are the key to improving integrity for the Australian public sector?
I think psychological safety is the fertile soil for contestation and for constructive disagreement, but also for the raising of questions, concerns, and ethical issues as well. So we looked at psychological safety because the data demonstrates it increases ethical behavior in teams, but it equally has this crucial role of improving contestation and constructive disagreement. And so why is that important? That's important because it widens the solution basis for us to complex problems. It widens the possibilities. Jennifer Garvey Berger has written about this in her Mind Traps for Complex Problems. And one of the mind traps she talks about is our need for agreement. And what that does is narrow the range of thinking and possibilities and solutions that we can bring to complex problems. So for me, the contestation is an added benefit alongside the freedom and space to raise problems when you've got that feeling in your gut that something is not quite right, or there's been a mistake made. Have you got that permission space from the leader and from the culture to raise that early?
So come on, Sue, you have been one of these busy senior leaders in the public service. I know that many of them listening to you speak right now, and they might be quietly thinking to themselves, sure, but I just don't have the time. I don't have the bandwidth. The demands on our public service are growing greater and greater and greater. What is your counter argument to them? Why should they invest in creating the psychological safety of their teams? And what's their first move?
Yeah, the time to pause is a real challenge for us. We're in an environment, as you say, where people are under enormous delivery pressure, and there is a number of interests at play. That is a given. But I don't think the pause has to be too onerous. And I think the benefits are going to be huge. The benefits of actually providing solutions to the work we have to do about minimizing risks so that the process matters, because how we do things, of course, matters just as much as what we achieve in our results. I think one of the things that can be super helpful here is to remember what our role is. So sometimes, yes, it is time that gets in the way and the rush and the stress because we're not using our executive function when we are in that brain mode. And so what we have to do is honestly stop and breathe for a minute and recall our role. Role clarity, I think, really helps us calm down for those times in which we have to raise issues that make us feel really uncomfortable. So, for example, public servants have a role which is both to serve the minister of the day to get solutions, but also to serve the long-term principles, institutions of the public service. I think if that role clarity is front of mind, alongside pausing and just breathing for a moment and recalling our role, that allows us to really say what we have to say in the moment.
So at the lab, we have some early stage findings of our Southeast Asia pulse check, where we interview and poll people throughout the region on what they want from Australian development assistance. And these findings are indicating that they want more opportunities to exchange knowledge with Australia. Think high-level exchange of approaches on things like tech regulation, public sector reform and the like. So what do you think that Australia has to offer our near neighbours when it comes to lessons on public integrity?
Well, I think before we even get to that, there's a point of what we model and our own behaviour. If we're going to have credibility and legitimacy with our partners, I think we need to show that we walk this talk. That would just be my first comment. In terms of sharing with them, I think we have to do a lot of listening first to the issues that they face. Each country faces different cultural, systemic, and economic challenges to integrity and to integrity systems. So I think there's some listening there. But of course, we can share our own knowledge in my area that I'm particularly interested in, which is behavioral ethics. We can share that knowledge. We can share what we learned from RoboDebt. We can share our reflections, our evaluations of what we have learned, and we can engage with them on those to see if they are relevant to them as well. But it's really a matter of what have we learned and what can we share? What does the data tell us about what gets in the way for people in doing the right thing? And I should say that my emphasis has been very much on most people are trying to do the right thing rather than the corruption end of things.
Well, so it certainly sounds as though there are some universal challenges to public sector leadership, not just in Australia, but abroad as well. Well, it feels as though we are just getting started, but in fact, we are nearing time to wrap up. And we're going to wrap up with our standing lab hypotheticals. So, Sue, I want you to imagine that you're going about your normal day at work, and as you board the elevator to go to your office, you find yourself standing between the Prime Minister and the Minister for International Development. Now, you have 1 minute to tell them why investing in the psychological safety and contestability of the public service will deliver better foreign policy results for Australia. Over to you.
I think building leaders' skills to build trust in teams creates the space for more policy solutions to complex problems and increases ethical behaviour in teams. And this can only be a good thing for Australia's reputation as a trusted partner and as a practical problem solver.
Well, Sue, you have nailed our pitch. We love a guest that stays under the 1 minute mark, and you were certainly one of those today. So thank you, Sue, for taking the time for this chat. It's been wonderful to have you.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Join me next time on The Readout, where each episode we sit down with one author, one big idea, and talk about how it can shape the future of Australia's development assistance. And if you liked hearing from Sue on integrity, then you can find a link to her article in our show notes. And if you want extra previews, insights, and development analysis, then sign up to our email at devintelligencelab.com. Special thanks to the lab team behind the scenes. That's Ruby St. Ledger, Ruby Solwick, and Walter Kolnagy. Our music is by Viljami Meto. I'm Bridie Rice. This is The Readout. Talk soon.
We at The Lab acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which this podcast is recorded, the Ngunnawal and Ngambri people, and we extend our respects to their elders past, present and emerging. We're inspired by the storytelling tradition of the world's oldest living culture, and we pay homage to it when we share our stories or intelligence on this podcast.